Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein. On today's episode, Web3 expert, educator, and advisor Danielle Davis, also known as NFT Ignition, joins me to discuss how she continues to introduce and educate new participants in the space. We discuss our experiences podcasting about the industry and how some of the greatest rivals to the Ethereum ecosystem have failed to live up to the hype. Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network. Right on. Well, hey, welcome to NFP, Danielle Davis, aka NFT Ignition. Welcome back. We've spoken on the show. We've spoken on Spaces. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, I was just talking to you before the show about this podcast you're doing. And, you know, we have that in common. We've both been doing the NFT focused podcast for a long time. Mm-hmm. Not sure which one is technically the first. I haven't looked at dates.
Yeah. Around the same time for sure. There wasn't a lot of them out in 21. So it's nice to see now that people have choices and some different personalities and different formats. And it's always good to have more options.
Yeah. And you do yours as kind of like, I've had a bit of a break, hey, because of Christmas, I took a break for a little while. You do yours, what, on a basically weekly or so basis? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah, we have one come out a week. We actually just recorded like a 4 hour long podcast recap of the entire year that we're chopping into multiple episodes. We'll see how many ends up being at the end, but we went month by month over everything that basically happened in 22.
Okay. Now, see, personally, I get restless after about an hour and a half of chatting on podcasts. I don't know. What's your experience with that?
Yes, it's a long time. I have ADD. So for me, I'm glad we have three people because they can kind of bounce off each other for a while. And then
that helps.
I can
have you ever found
in.
Yourself kind of zoning out a little bit, though? You must after that amount of time.
100%. I do it in Spaces all the time. Meetings.
What was that question? What did you ask?
Yeah, it's especially when I book a whole day of meetings and I'll forget to book like time for lunch. Those are definitely my days where I'm like taking notes but barely paying attention.
Yeah. No, it's funny how for me too. I mean, I don't know, I don't want to diminish, you know, what it means to have ADHD, but I feel like I do hit some of those characteristics in the, I think the interesting thing with it being you can also be kind of hyper focused on certain things too, right?
Oh yeah. But you don't get to choose what you're hyper focused on.
No.
Sometimes it's not relevant to what you need to be doing in your life. Sometimes it's like, oh, I need to reorganize my clothes for no goddamn reason at 12 in the morning. And, you know, you have a whole bunch of meetings and you're just sitting here like thinking about how you're going to organize your clothes. I never get the cleaning ones, unfortunately.
But yeah. I don't have that impulse either. Interesting. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I for me, it's probably more of a thing of, I don't know if it's like a, almost like a guilt type thing if I'm not busy with something, where I feel like there's a discontentedness I have if I'm not busy with something.
Right. Yeah, for me, it's more mental stuff. I have to be mentally stimulated. I don't have to ever leave my house as long as there's enough interesting stuff going on Twitter. I can keep working. Sometimes I'll get hyper-focused on writing, which has been more recently what I've been doing. It's like the worst time to be super motivated. It'll be like 2 to 4 in the morning and my son has school at 7. So, and then I'll be like, oh my God, I need to write these 16 articles tonight. Like I need to get this off of my brain. And I'll just write and write and write for hours. But I never get to like pick when it's going to happen. But I just roll with it. Like, don't say no.
Okay.
Go in, lean into it. Get those 16 articles out. Have a really crappy next day because you didn't get any sleep. But it's worth it because otherwise, if you would have just slept, you probably would have never got those out.
Interesting. See, because me personally, when I write in my mind. And so then it kind of occupies my thoughts for, the day. And then I just throw it all up on paper, basically is how it works. So by the time I'm writing it, physically writing it, it's already written. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's your process?
Yeah, I kind of do the same. I'll plan at least topics. I'll just plan multiple topics and they'll be short ones. Like I've been doing a lot of like educational writing lately. The last that I did was for community managers. So there's like 65 pages of just articles of things that will help community managers manage a community, like how to deal with someone who's upset in the Discord, how to make a pitch deck, how to use Hootsuite, how to, tracking all these marketing things, all these different things that I think would help people, but they're all short articles. Mm-hmm. So in my head, I'm just planning out the topics. And once I get all the topics, it's a little bit of research for each one. Like I have to use the tool I'm about to teach somebody how to use. And then yeah, I just like spit it all out in a few hours.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Very similar then. Yeah. Is a lot of this stuff, is this on that NFTbasics.com site then, or?
No, it's nowhere yet. I don't even know what I'm going to do with it. I've just been like writing and like, I have like 65 articles I haven't put anywhere.
That's a lot of material.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah,
I could even put it in a book and print it like old school.
You could. It could be like a handy resource and I don't know, put it up on Amazon or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do people still buy books off Amazon? I don't even know.
I buy my books off eBay personally because they're so cheap.
eBay. Wow.
I bought
back in time here.
For like $3-4. People used books. They're just, I don't know. People just want to get rid of them. So.
So eBay is still a viable book buying platform?
Yes.
You know, I had no idea.
When I got into NFTs, I was actually selling damaged packages of underwear on eBay.
Okay.
Like 10 grand a month worth of underwear.
What?
Yes.
Please explain how you ever thought of doing that.
So it always starts on Facebook. All of my stories somehow, like crypto started on Facebook. My eBay stuff started on Facebook.
Interesting.
But I saw like an ad for this box that was a bunch of mixed goods for sale. And in the comments, someone was like, I bought it and it was trash. I'm going to stick to Boxed or this company that was selling, like, I think it was Boxed. I'd have to look that up. But no, it's not. Anyways, I don't remember what it was. It's been a while now. But this company that was selling things from Target that people had either returned or had damaged in the store. Now, you can't return underwear, obviously.
Of course.
But people will always poke a hole in the bag, pull out a pair, look at it, and shove it back in or just leave it sitting there. So they pull all those packages off the shelves and they put them in a box and they sell them for like less than $1 a pack.
Sure.
And you can sell like the nicer brand ones for sometimes $15, $20 because they're $30 if you were to buy them at the store.
And this is why we pay too much for underwear. Thanks a lot, you jerks.
There's a whole market of people who buy all of their underwear and socks and shirts and stuff, damaged packages on eBay for a little bit cheaper.
Wild.
It's a lot of work though. It's a lot of work. I had all these bins with like numbers on them. I had to number all the packages because you could have six packages that look the same that are a little bit different. And the shipping eats up half your everything. It's very time consuming, but I kind of like staying busy, so I didn't really mind it. Like I needed something to do at the time.
COVID
was happening and I was like,
That makes sense. Everybody was getting everything from eBay, Amazon, whatever.
Yeah, because Amazon shipping was so ridiculous. It was quicker to buy things, even food related on eBay, because it was just an individual shipping it through the mail versus these companies that were all backlogged.
Okay. Man, that's changed a lot in the last couple years.
I was selling food for a while.
Damaged food?
No, the food I just bought from the grocery store and just turned around and sold it for four times the price
on
eBay. Yeah.
And people were buying it.
Yeah, certain things
food,
that
basically.
You couldn't certain things you couldn't find in certain states because of the shortages, like the big
Okay.
soup Bear Creek. I don't know if you know, it's like a big bag of dried soup mix. You make like 8 gallons of soup with this bag. Those are really popular. Muffin mix,
Oh,
for
wow.
some reason,
What
people were
about, were
having
you
trouble
one of those
finding
toilet
some.
paper hoarders? Were you one of those people?
I was not, but my dad, I think he had like PTSD from crappy toilet paper because he still has a ton of like toilet paper that he still buys it a lot. Like, I think he's really worried that he'll have to use that crappy toilet paper one more time.
Back before COVID even broke the mainstream news, if you were following Twitter at the time, you knew it was coming before it hit the mainstream. Like I knew.
I didn't even have
I was like,
Twitter back then.
oh, really? Okay. Well, there was just a lot of stuff on there coming out of certain parts of the world, where it was like, oh, this is really bad. And I remember saying to my wife, buy a bunch of toilet paper, buy a bunch of soap because we're going to have problems buying it. And so she did. She and we still have extra toilet paper, but we never had the worries about it when it hit the news. You know, it was something where we were like, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. So it worked out. I mean, I'm not at the point where I'm going to be drop shipping toilet paper on Amazon. It's not like I have that excess supply, but I do have a few spare rolls, that's for sure. You know, and then it's like, you know, so my daughter's like, oh, I'm running out of toilet paper. I'm like, hey, here's a bag for you.
There you go. Put a bow on it for Christmas.
Yeah, so wow, I'm glad those days are behind us. But anyway, yeah, but speaking of days behind us, what was this last year like for you in the whole Web3 space?
It was, a roller coaster, always.
Yep.
I would say the biggest thing was FameLady's getting acquired by Dazz, which happened in
Right.
officially in September, but we had,
We want to talk
well,
a little bit
as
about that?
So for anyone who's not familiar with the FameLady Squad story, it was the first all-female generative NFT project launched in July of 2021. It was also launched by the first all-female team.
She's putting up air quotes when she's saying
Um,
that.
we found out a month later that it was actually three men in Russia running the project, not the three women we thought it was. And we were able to, with the help of Artchick and a vote on Twitter, get the smart contract and the Discord and the domain and all that stuff, and took over the project. And we've been running it basically for free for 15 months, at cost to the team. We had a few donations here and there, but because of what happened, the project had basically gone to zero, and we had to kind of revive it from there.
Right, yeah.
We didn't get any of the original mint funds, which was millions of dollars that the team walked away with, the original team. So we were just kind of all on volunteer mode. We, including, mods, community managers, that kind of stuff. We couldn't promise anybody like reliable pay. Once in a while, when we had a good month, we could pay them, but it was like we never knew how much, we never knew when, and it's really hard to run a project that way. But we were able to somehow sustain a vibrant community the entire time. And we just in September did get officially, joined the Dazz 3D and Taffy team. And that's a company that has 3D software, modeling software, and like an avatar creator. They created the art for Clone X and a lot of other projects they have right now. They're working with Timex on that drop, as well as the Game of Thrones, which is this month. Maybe already dropped because it's the 28th, but
I think so. I think it dropped. That's I had Ash on for that. Ash Cooper Kearns. Yeah.
I work with her at
She was
Webecco.
on Spaces with me. I mean, were you on the same
Nice.
Spaces? No, it was a different
No,
one. Yeah. Sorry, they
she
all kind of
you
blend
know
together in my memory.
it's so funny because before that I do an interview, she will come on right after me or right before me. They'll be like, oh, we have Ash on tomorrow. We have Ash on next week. I'm like, how does this keep happening? We need to be on something together. We
You
never
should
are.
be. Yeah. No, I actually did try to have her on the same space as you were on that last time, but she was busy with the Game of Thrones stuff.
Of course. A lot going on over there. So we joined them and we basically spend half of our time on FameLady Squad stuff and half of our time on Dazz stuff. Although it's been more leaning towards us spending most of our time on FameLady Squad stuff right now. We're kind of focusing on the podcast first, but we have ton of stuff in the works, and basically, you know, we're getting paid now. Like, we
You actually
have
have an income now.
we have income for the first time after 15 months of working for free. We have resources for the project. We're still the decision makers. It's basically a win-win. It's you know, the only thing I will say is Web2 moves a little bit slower, and this company is only 15% Web3, and the rest of it is Web2.
How
So
do you
we're
come to
having
that
to,
figure of 15%?
based
What?
on the number of people working on Web3 projects versus the people
I
working on
see.
Web2 stuff.
Okay.
And that's pretty much dead on, because they have about 100 people working there, and there's 15 people in the Web3 stuff. So
Makes
that's our
sense.
thing with that. But yeah, so we're kind of having to like go through the Web2 motions of things. But it's I think that's really good for us, especially now that we have all this opportunity and all these resources and stuff to kind of re center ourselves and restructure and, you know, all that.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder about that, a distinction between Webtoon and Web3, and I don't know if it's really like over the course of time, I feel like the two are kind of blending, right? It's just Web3 is just becoming more of an integration into it. Now, some people maybe would be like disgusted by that, and see it as a disappointment, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think we're nowhere near Web3 really yet. Like, we're
No.
working on it. We're all in the process of getting there. And you don't just blindly jump into this new thing. It needs to be like combined with what you're used to. Otherwise, how would you even know about it or figure out how to use it? Like, meet people where they're at.
Yeah, totally. Maybe you can explain to me, in terms of a what are you doing with Daz specifically? You talk about doing some work with them. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, so basically we've like completely joined the company. It's considered an acqui-hire. So we're, you know, in all their marketing meetings. We're working with them on their projects. For example, we worked on the Fight Back Apes project. We did some marketing for that. Me specifically, I do Web3 educational content creation as well as collabs for Daz projects.
And so for you, it was kind of just you just shifted over and kept doing the same kind of work, basically, is what I'm hearing.
And it's nice to kind of be more focusing on education formally, because there isn't a single project that doesn't need it. You know, working with these big brands, we should be able to offer them education for their employees as well as you know, the people we're working with. Imagine you know, all these companies are doing, like, you know, Pepsi does an NFT drop. If you called customer service at Pepsi and be like, "What's an NFT?" They're not going to know what an NFT is unless you're just lucky enough to get somebody who happens to know, right? But they're not formally educating everybody that works there on like what it is, what it means, what's the future. Like, even just a few hours of interesting videos could make a big difference in terms of like spreading that adoption. Like, if a company is doing an NFT drop, the people working at the company should know what an NFT is.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of one of those things that, it's almost become a meme in a sense. What's an NFT? Do you know what I mean? Like,
It does get exhausting, but at the same time, like, I'll explain it to 1,000 people if I have the opportunity, because, you know, some of them are gonna get it and join the space. And you never know. It's just that's how it got to where we are now, is people individually telling other people what's happening, because you can't Google for this information. You kind of have to have like a friend that you trust that can tell you where to go and what to do, and like some sort of community around you, even if it's just one person. You know, that especially back in 21 and 20, when, you know, we first got in the space. I don't know when you first got in the space. When I first got in the space, you literally had to just find somebody who knew something.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, the only way I got, and I was in the fall of 2020, I think it was. The only way I got in was because I was writing for Cointelegraph and I interviewed people who were in the space and I was like, that's really cool, right? And then that's how I learned about it. It wasn't, you're right. You have to learn it from individuals. It still feels that way to some extent. I mean, obviously there's a lot more material out there now, but there's so much of it that's misleading or trying to
steer you in a way that feels like, I don't know, like shilling or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen that. That's weird, you know, with Twitter lately. I don't know if you've noticed it, but it just feels really shilly lately. I don't know why. It's
because the people getting paid for their tweets are still.
Am I off base?
No, you're right. It is. Well, it's so like the engagement farming just is so heavy. It drives me nuts how I will see. Is anybody still active? Like 16 times a day. Like at this point, like I'm just muting or blocking people that keep saying that. A lot of the same people just saying it over and over and over, and they get so much engagement on it. And it's like, we don't need to do a roll call every day. People are still here. It's just drives me nuts. But the shilling also, yeah, it's worse. But that's the thing. No matter where the market's at, there's always going to be people that are getting paid for tweets. Right. And like, this is the time when they want that money, you know, when things are down, they're getting paid like more in terms of ETH and whatnot. So they're never going to stop. That's how you know who's getting paid for their tweets.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I've had, I don't know, you must have that, you know, that message box that just fills up with, you know, unsolicited messages and like how many are just total trash. Right. I mean, you must get that a lot too. Right. And some of them are like, hey, we'll pay you to tweet about our whatever thing. Right.
Of course. Yeah. And you'll get like 6 copies of the same message from different accounts.
Always. Yeah. I'm the community manager. I'm the director. I'm the whatever.
And how many community managers do you have?
Yeah.
And a lot of them, you have to be careful because a lot of them can also be like trying to scam or hack your wallets.
Yeah.
Like for example, I was noticing a lot of them that was like, hey, will you review our game? I want you to write about this game, but first you have to download
it. Here's
the code when you get in to play the game. Guarantee you that would drain my wallet if I happen to have my wallet on the same computer, which I did not, but separate your devices for that reason.
No kidding. Yeah, you were mentioning that about this whole LastPass fiasco.
Yeah.
Where people's passwords and stuff were revealed, and you mentioned, you know, don't keep your seed phrases on there in the first place, but if they are on there, it's definitely, I don't know, like what would you do in that case? Like, I guess you'd have to empty your wallet, you'd have to move your
stuff. You'd just have to move things. There's nothing you can do once your seed phrase has been revealed, and you just have to assume that it has. Like if you've ever saved it on a Word doc or a password manager or anything on your computer, you should just move your stuff now because
just don't, kids. Just don't. Just write move your it stuff down. Now.
Start from scratch. Get some hammer, those little letters you hammer it into metal. Or like the block folio thing, whatever it's called, the metal one where you slide the letters in and then it's got a thing. Fireproof, waterproof safe. Like, yeah, don't play.
Just write it down on paper and keep it in a safe place, like a safety deposit box or another safe of some sort. Your anti-safety deposit box. What do you think of that?
I am in some ways. I just
there's a trust level there. You are. It's true. Yeah, there is someone else that has access to it. Then that's true.
You have to trust the bank and that the government will never come and try to get from the bank because they can't say no to that. They have to give it up. And also,
yeah, like, that's a good point.
If you die, it's a very difficult process to get that passed on to like family members. So it's not necessarily a safe way to like pass it on either. There is on-chain trusts, which are good for that if you're trying to like save things in a way that you wanted to pass on to somebody. And they don't even have to know about crypto because there is a way for them to like liquidate it as well.
Oh, can you explain that a little bit? I'm curious.
Yeah, so it's a company called Lightbeam Financial. They actually have an NFT called Trust Fund Babies. They're really cute. And they're free. So you mint this free NFT, and once you have the Trust Fund Baby, you can then set up a free trust fund. And you can get it on secondary if they're minted out. I'm not sure. I haven't checked in a while. But basically, it is like a multi-sig wallet that they also have access to. There's certain parameters that are set. It's also a tax benefit for people that move things to that, because that's considered like I don't want to get into the tax thing.
Into the legalities of it, yeah.
Yeah. But if you're in America, it can be a tax benefit for you to move things and profits into a trust. And yeah, it's the first on-chain trust fund that I know of. I don't think there are any others out there, but it's working as of now. You can set it up. So, and there's ways that you can set up, you know, like your beneficiaries and what will happen and time frame and all that kind of stuff. And then they have the option to either be passed on the crypto or to just have the company liquidate everything at what it's worth. And this can include like NFTs and stuff.
So at some point, are you entrusting them with the custody of your crypto though?
Partially. You still have access to it.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a multi-sig wallet that has multiple people in it.
Right. What I'm saying is, would they theoretically be able to drain the wallet in or in some way?
Yes. Well, they have to be able to move the assets in order to give them to your beneficiaries if something happens.
Right. So you are entrusting them.
Yes.
Would you say that's safer than trusting a safety deposit box in a bank? I don't know.
Well, it's insured. So that
okay.
helps.
Okay. Okay.
So if anything happens, they can still get the value of the assets to your beneficiaries or back to you.
I don't know. I'm just a little paranoid now with this whole FTX thing and everything where everybody's like, oh yeah, they're blue chip. Trust them. You know, Kevin O'Leary likes them.
For sure. Yeah. Well, it's all based on smart contracts. So if you have people who are familiar with coding, you can have them look into how that all works.
Right. Yeah. The other thing you were mentioning
was they're just instantly pulling things out. It's all based on certain numbers and certain things being met based on the smart contracts.
Okay, okay. You were mentioning in a tweet, if you get a hardware wallet for Christmas.
I didn't know that was going to be so controversial. I got a lot of responses. People are like, nah,
hey, you got engagement. That's what you want, right, Danielle? You want engagement, so good on you.
For sure. It's been a little dead lately, huh? But yeah, don't.
So tell me about that.
There's so many reasons not to. First off, you don't know where they got it from. Say somebody got a used hardware wallet off of eBay and turn around and give it to you as a gift. There's a lot of reasons that could be sketchy. Extra chips can be added to them where when you do things, it can be sent to another location.
So even if you did the secure step of making your own fresh key on it, it still could have you know, something in it that's going to follow that.
They can have pre-generated new keys on them. So when you set it up, it gives you the key it wants them to give you.
Uh-huh.
So the trick for that one is actually to setting it up twice and seeing if it gives you the same key twice.
Oh, interesting.
But a lot of people aren't going to know to like do all of these things. So it's just better off, like, don't set the standard that it's okay. You know, they say get your devices directly from the manufacturer. So why would you let not only somebody else hand it to you, but like, you don't know where they got it from. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like sketchy all around.
I like the look of those new Ledger stacks. Have you seen those? Those are slick.
Yeah. I haven't
are
seen
they
one
even,
in person.
Are they
I've
even
the
out
videos.
Yet? I don't know if they're available yet.
I know they had one at one of the conferences that people were playing with. I don't know if they're selling them though, but they're,
I don't know.
People have them.
Yeah. Well, but even here's the thing. If you think back to Ledger, you know, when it comes to security, they kind of blew it where somebody leaked, I don't know how it happened, but they leaked a bunch of people's personal information.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, can you even do that safely?
Well, I'd much rather my address and name get out than for some reason, like any wallet information getting out.
No, it is the lesser of the two. But
yeah,
it just feels like, is there any way to safely do this? It seems like there's risk no matter how you approach it.
Yeah, there is. Well, and it's funny when I saw the one of the guys that works at Ledger speaking at VCon, he said, if you're not terrified of the idea of self-custody, you don't know what you're doing.
That's like CZ from Binance was saying. Now, of course, he was doing this to, you know, prevent people from withdrawing their funds, is my impression. Mm-hmm. You know, was saying, look, if you're self-custodying, like 90 some percent of people are going to lose their funds. And I don't think he's far off. How many people would lose, but you know, the reality is you just got to equip yourself. You got to study a little bit. It's obviously safer to have it in your own custody than on an exchange. We all know that for sure now after seeing what we've seen.
For sure. For sure. Well, and it's not the first time he's said that. And I understand how somebody who owns a centralized exchange would think that that's the safest way.
Let us take care of your money for you, and we'll stake it for you, and we'll, you know, get all the benefits of it for you.
and the ones, like, for example, Coinbase is insured, and people say, oh, well, it's insured. It's not, you're not insured. They're insured. And they've said so before that if they were to go bankrupt, that people would not get their money back, even if they were to be bailed out. They literally said this in a podcast at one point. And so we know what would happen if things were to go bad. Just like at a bank. A bank is the same way. Like, and just like an exchange, if people go to a bank and everybody pulls out their money at the same time, they will have liquidity issues. They don't have everybody's money sitting in one bank. Just like exchanges don't have everybody's money just sitting there waiting to be withdrawn.
Mm-hmm. Well, like even if FTX had been in a better position financially, they still would have had a serious problem on their hands with all the people that were freaking out withdrawing funds.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, people started tweeting about Binance being next, and that's why he said that. But also, you know, if everybody freaks out, it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, when I look at, you know, the exchanges with like the amount of money they must be making just from staking ETH alone, right? Holding people's ETH for them and then turning around and staking it. It's massively profitable. So then for them to have people going, no, I'm taking out my ETH, even if it's not a solvency issue, it's a huge income issue for those centralized exchanges.
For sure.
Not only that, but also a governance issue, because they have a huge role in the governance of proof of stake blockchain. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Although I was seeing just the other day, there was it's down to two pools for Bitcoin now because of the mining situation. Two pools basically have more than 50%.
That was because of the storms, Bitcoin mining. Right? Like people were turning off their electricity because the storms were so bad?
Right. Yeah. Well, and profitability, of course, has been getting a little lower.
That's true.
So it's funny how, you know, people will look at ETH and go, oh, no, look, there's only two major staking pools. And then they'll say, but Bitcoin's decentralized. It's like, well, there's actually two major pools for Bitcoin as well. Just so you know, they're about as centralized. Now, having said that, they are pools. Like, you know, these are not just one person there flipping a switch on all this stuff. This is thousands of people on these pools.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of an interesting problem. I don't know. I feel like we're in a weird time right now. You know, it's almost like, I don't know at which point we're at in the whole market cycle. Does it feel like a low to you, or are we getting lower yet, do you think?
I think a lot of that really depends on outside factors. You know, I mentioned in the spaces just that the whole idea of recession and like a housing crash and that kind of stuff would definitely cause us to go a lot lower. I'm kind of hoping we do, but without the recession stuff.
You're hoping we go lower for the bargains, but not for any of the bad stuff, is what you're saying. You want to like snap up a condo for cheap or something, or what's your thinking?
That would be great. I don't know. You know, I've no. So my dad has a rental, and I always was like, oh, I want to buy a rental. That was my goal: buy a rental. Uh-huh. These last few years, living next to his tenant, I have realized that I do not want to own a rental ever.
Well, just get a property management company. You pay them like 10% of the rent. Big deal.
Not in a state that has, not in Minnesota, for sure. It's especially with COVID. We ended up having a tenant stay for over 2 years that didn't pay rent.
Oh, man.
That was incredibly abusive. Threatened to kidnap my son when we evicted
what?
Her. Yep. I had a restraining order Holy against cow. Her. Never cleaned up her dog poop for the entire 2 years she was there. And we share a backyard, like my son's playground is back there and stuff. It was just awful.
Wow.
Awful. He was an awful person.
Couldn't you hire a property management company to take care of all that crap, that part of it for you? Yes, sure. It means your profits are lessened, but
They wouldn't have been able to do anything about her not paying rent and not getting evicted because there was a memorandum. You couldn't evict people because of COVID. No matter what they did, you couldn't evict them. So there's nobody we could have paid to fix that problem. we had to wait for it to get, and it kept getting extended. And she just moved out last month. As we were finally able to.
Hooray.
Yeah.
now you're like, do we want to rent this again? Like,
I'm moving next door.
Okay.
We're gonna fix it up.
Could definitely be traumatized by that whole process, right? And renting it to somebody and then having a nightmare happen for
sure. So many court dates with her. So stressful. Even though you didn't do anything wrong, like standing in front of a judge and being yelled at. Wonderful. Okay. So I had loaned her money before she ever moved in. It was a few months after she moved in. She was paying rent on time. We were friends before all this started. I went to high school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know, it just keeps getting deeper, right? So I loaned her some money for Christmas because her paycheck was later, whatever. And she had been paying rent for months. I knew she was good for the money. Anyways, then she found out she was like sick and dying. She quit her job, all this stuff. Whoa. Like, she has lupus. So she was told she has 10 years to live, which I don't even know that I have 10 years to live, to be honest with you. That's a long time. But anyways, that's really cold of me to say, but she turned into a monster. She turned into a damn monster. So anyways, so I had to take her to court for this money that I lent her, besides all the eviction stuff. And the judge, she was like, oh, well, she posted on social media that she's going to Paris. So since I'm sick and I don't have money, that turns it into a gift because she's doing really well. And the judge screamed at me 4 different times for posting on social media about my trip. Uh-huh. It became the whole like court case was now about him yelling at me. And not to mention, I gave her crypto. It was the first crypto court case in Minnesota that like small claims court. Yeah. So I paid her in crypto. I told her how to cash it out and everything. Like in all the texts, like it's me explaining how to cash it out, how to get it, all that. Her giving me the address. And he's like, well, crypto's not real. They sent her nothing. It was like, oh my God, this just didn't work. I won the case, but like, I didn't expect to after how many times that the judge yelled at me. But I was like, if I lose this because he thinks crypto is not real, like I was gonna be super mad about that. But he was old, probably shouldn't be a judge anymore.
At least not for crypto cases.
He was like, do you know who's on Facebook? Burglars. Burglars are on Facebook.
Like, true.
Okay.
Along with everybody else.
Right? I was like, well, only my family and friends can see my stuff, but okay. It was wild.
Wow. And so you won the case. What did it mean to win the case then? Like, it meant that she had to leave or what?
Well, she had already been evicted.
Okay.
This was a separate case. There was 3 cases. The restraining order. Because of my son, then the eviction, and then the money that I lent her.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I won, but that just means she owes me money. It doesn't mean she actually has to pay me. Mm-hmm. If she has a job, I can file something where I'll get like $10 a month for it out of her paycheck. But
perpetual income, Danielle.
Yeah. That's very true. Yep.
You can use it to, you know, DCA into something. I don't know.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a weird year it's been. Have you seen this whole thing with Solana? Like, I was just looking at it again the other day, and it is just falling into, like, oblivion now. I didn't see that coming. You know, like,
Solana.
You mean... There was always the elements of it, especially when it froze and it's like, ew, this isn't a good look, you know? And then
and
I was like, well, this is really quite centralized actually, right? But exactly, I guess I didn't see it coming to this low, I guess is what I should say.
I've never been a Solana fan. I've never bought it. I've never been on there. It was too centralized for me. Even from the beginning, I felt that way. And especially when the network went down and people were like, oh, it's because you don't have enough nodes running your network. Let's run some nodes from a third party. We'll help you get your network running. And they said, no, we want to control all the nodes. We don't want anybody running nodes for us. This is on us. But then they didn't build more. So They're just like setting themselves up for failure in multiple ways. And also, like, decentralize just a little bit so you can keep your shit up. Like, that many
Yep.
trans, it was like just a normal number of transactions in like 1 minute was too much for them. And it was down for 48 hours, was the longest time it was ever down.
Right.
Imagine your whole life, your whole project, your all that stuff being on this blockchain that just goes down for 48 hours.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
No, thank you.
Yep, totally. So now there's a bunch of the bigger projects. I think what's it called? They're bridging them over to Ethereum, is
Yep.
my
And
impression.
Polygon.
Yeah, Polygon, right? It's what, Utes and DaGods, I think, were the two big ones that were mentioned.
Yep. I'm
I
sure
think
it'll be
Ethereum will
more.
just take over everything. I think Ethereum will just, now that it's proof of stake, I think it's game over.
Yeah. I think at times we will still see the gas fees being too high and forcing people onto things like Polygon. But I mean,
It's just
sharding
still
is
on
really.
Ethereum, though. Polygon's a layer two on
Yeah.
Ethereum,
Yeah.
right?
True that. True. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's just such an establishment there. Maybe this is, maybe I'll regret saying this in a year, but I don't know. I just feel like the purpose of these other blockchains is slowly fading. Although, there's still a lot of interesting, unique solutions out there and a lot of interoperability stuff that's going to happen, of course. But
Yeah.
I feel like anyone that was set up from the start to be like the Ethereum killer, like if that's all you've got, like,
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
It's true. Well, and even ones that weren't necessarily marketing themselves that way, like Wax, for example. Wax had a lot of capabilities that just weren't possible on ETH, like the blending of
True.
NFTs and stuff. And it's, like a green, it's always been green, like the footprint and whatnot. But it still seems like it's just dying off, even with these large projects that had minted over there that people never really knew was happening, but it was making money. Like Tops, Garbage Pail Kids, that kind of stuff. Peg pot, what are those things called? Pogs?
Pogs,
They were like the tokens you flipped.
yes,
Okay, yeah,
right.
they had
I
a
really
collection
like
over
Wax.
there.
I think Wax is
Yeah.
cool. I'm just saying, I feel like everything's eventually going to somehow be connected to Ethereum. Like,
Yeah.
we're obviously still going to have all our own, these little ecosystems and whatever, but yeah, I don't know. Like, Tezos is a good example of one that could stand the test of time, where
Yeah.
it does have a good community. Although, did you see this thing with Man United ripping off, what's that artist? Lucrecy or something like that. It was just the other day where Manchester United football team has art that they're doing with the Tezos Foundation, and it looks very strikingly similar
Oh.
to a very successful established artist on Tezos. I think his name is Lucrece, is what I remember it to be. I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Okay.
And the
Damn.
resemblance is, it's indisputable. Like, it's
Oof.
clearly been borrowed from that
Well,
work.
but think about this. What is it? What's the phrase
Bad
about
PR is
no?
better than no PR,
Yes,
or
yes.
no
A
PR
lot
is
of
bad
people might
PR.
hear about Tezos for the first time because of
That's a fair point, yeah.
that. Does anything happen on Tezos that isn't art? Like, do they have DeFi or other types of things
DeFi on
going
Tezos? That's a good question. I don't know. I've only ever known like the Tezos, like object.com, and
there?
prior to
Right,
that
right.
was the Hick It Nunk thing. That's a good question. I don't
Because
know if there's much in the
that's
way
what
of
makes,
Tezos DeFi.
right, that's what makes some of these like blockchains survive is the degens coming in on a bunch of DeFi projects and
Right.
the
And then they spend their
transaction
money on
fee.
NFTs, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I mean, the NFTs are the way to kind of like show off how well you've done in a sense.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what they
So I
need.
don't know. It'll be interesting to see, if anything materializes from that. But from what I
Yeah.
saw, it's like this is pretty blatant. Like, this is clearly lifted from this artist. Now, the
Yeah.
actual artist, I'm putting that in quotation marks, who did the work for this Man United thing is at this point anonymous. But the person who kind of called this out, who was it? I forget now. Vamp something, Vamp Clown or something like that. Clown Vamp. Yeah, Clown Vamp. I don't know them. They said, yeah, okay. Oh, it's a tweet he posted 19 hours ago. It says, we have a problem. On the left, a monster by D-E-S, Des, and then L-U-C-R-E-C-E, Des Lucrece or Lucrece. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I don't know what the ethnicity of it is. Then it says, one of the most popular and longstanding collections on Tezos. And then on the right, a devil, a new project by Man United, Manchester United. Okay, you're talking like one of the largest.
Oh, my God.
That's got to be one of the biggest sports franchises in the world, if not the biggest.
Right. Okay.
On Tezos, in partnership with the Tezos Foundation. And they are, I got to share it with you. I'll edit this down a little bit. You've got to see this. Okay, I'm going to put it in the chat. Okay, have a look at this. It's nuts. Okay, so the one on left is Des Lucrece. The one on the right is Man United. Clown vamp. Like, okay, and then scroll down to some of his other ones. Like, okay, and then he does say, I found more copy traits, and he found the artist's own collection, which has a number of these pieces in it. He's leaving the artist anonymous. But that's pretty bad, right? Like, you're just literally going and taking someone else's art.
Well, and in this instance, who would you say is necessarily at fault? Like, just the artist that took the art, or also
there has to
Manchester
be some due diligence there on the part of Man United. Exactly. They should be looking into this and going, hey, like, we need to make sure this is not a copyright infringement.
Right. And I'm surprised that they would use an artist that is anonymous.
And the Tezos Foundation.
Yeah.
They would know about this art. The Tezos Foundation.
It's weird that they kept it. They stole from the blockchain that they're then putting it on. Like, there's no way they weren't going to get caught.
There's no way they couldn't have known. Unless it was just complete ignorance. I don't even know how that's possible.
You know, we need to combine AI with reverse image searches so we can find things easier, like for companies to be able to do this a little bit easier. Because a lot of times if you reverse an image, it won't show up in an image search for that image.
Mm.
That's where we need to add some AI into that.
Interesting. Anyway, yeah, Man United, Tezos Foundation. You gotta fix this. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but that is
not only the original artist needs to be paid.
Yeah.
Pay them and take down all the art. New collection, new artist.
They've gotta redo it. They've gotta come
have the actual artist come in and make some stuff for you.
You know, it's one thing if it's it's one thing if it's like satirical, like you're satirizing someone else's art. Or something like that. It's like, no, but this is not satirical.
Right. It's definitely not a derivative either.
Well, I mean, I guess they could pay him and make it a derivative, you know? So yeah, this is inspired by Lucrece, I guess is how his name's pronounced, I'm guessing. We're going to make things right and pay them. I don't know. To me, it just seems, I don't know. I don't know how that's possible that could happen.
Yeah.
So,
and yet it's happened so many times.
That's it. I'm not watching
so many
soccer
projects
anymore. I never watch soccer.
Well, it's like this is not the first time we've heard this exact story. I mean, look back to like Crypto Chicks or like the Phoenix Collection or all of these projects where the original art was directly taken from an artist and they made a whole collection out of it.
It happens time and time again, but I don't know. I just would think, okay, Man United, I can understand. They might not know anything about the whole scene. All right.
Well, they should figure it out before they do
it.
And
they're just going, hey, this looks slick, right? This looks really good. I really like the look of it, blah, blah, blah. But Tezos Foundation? How could they not have had some alarm bells go off?
Maybe they thought the actual artist was involved. When they saw it, they just assumed.
It's possible.
Maybe he is the anonymous artist.
Ooh, plot twist. This is all a big PR campaign. Controversy is the best way to get
general.
controversy is like literally the best way to get your stuff out there.
Right, right. It's like the Banksy, fake Banksy. Is it Banksy? Is it not Banksy? Yeah, now everybody's like, is it that guy? Is it not that guy?
Wow, you are like 4D chess there, Danielle. Way to go. You're way ahead of this game. I hadn't thought of that possibility. And he, you know, he could just be saying, this is horrible. I can't believe my art's being lifted like this. And it's actually...
Did he respond?
I don't actually, I don't know. But I mean, like Cosimo de' Medici, Snoop Dogg, he's complaining about it. Like, they've been called out. They've been called out. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm pulling for, following it now for sure.
To get fairly compensated for this.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that I feel like never happens is the original artist.
Yeah, that's a sad thing,
things
right?
Were taken from. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a positive note here, though. Let's let's shift over to, you know, happy times. Thoughts for, next year, you know, it's going to be a weird year, I think. But like, what are you hoping to accomplish in the new year?
Yeah. I mean, I really want to focus on creating some sort of formal like course set for NFTs. I've been thinking about reaching out to the colleges in my area, even middle schools, high schools, and seeing if they'll let me come teach some classes. I really want to be able to kind of test out the classes that I've made and like perfect them and then bring them to the public on a larger scale. So it'd be really cool if some of the schools around here, you know, I went to school to be a teacher, so I do have connections with probably the best departments to be doing this in.
All right on.
So, yeah, I want to get hands-on with this, and I really just want to get feedback on what I've been working on for the last few months.
So how do you get past kind of the negative stigma that comes with that? Because, that particular demographic is probably... generally negative towards the whole scene.
Not in my experience. It's actually it depends, because there was a trend for a while there where we had all the like eco complaints from kind of that age group, but it seemed like a lot of those, I haven't been hearing that anymore, and I don't know if that has anything to do with, you know, the Ethereum merge, or people were just kind of undereducated on the topic and the source, because if you look at you know, the what it costs to print money and like the alternatives to some of the things that the blockchain is trying to solve, it's actually, you know, really beneficial to people, especially like people in underserved nations and whatnot. But yeah, I haven't really heard any complaints anymore about that, and maybe it's just like the people I've been talking to, but people are just really interested in it, it seems like. But you know, if you have your wallet stolen, you don't stop using money, and that's kind of what it is with crypto, is like people here have one bad experience and they stop using it, but that's just because it hasn't gotten to the point yet to grow beyond one experience kind of pushing you away from it, and that's just a matter of time before that happens.
Yeah. No, it's just like, you know, you look at this whole thing with FTX and people will be like, oh, it was a Ponzi or whatever. And people hear Ponzi and they hear FTX and they hear, you know, crypto or whatever. And they go, oh, crypto is a Ponzi, right? And it's like, well, I mean, when Bernie Madoff, when Bernie Madoff took off with millions of dollars, it doesn't mean the dollar is a Ponzi, right?
Exactly. 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 Yeah. And, I try to push more the information behind the technology versus like projects or anything specific that's being built on it, for multiple reasons. Like, I don't want people to come into NFTs thinking that PFPs are an NFT and that's all it is. I want people coming into the space that are going to have crazy ideas of how to use this technology and like kind of break the bubbles that we're in and build some cool shit that we never thought of building. But also, so that's not what it is. It's not that simple. It's being just used for a few things now, but like the possibilities are endless, and that's how we should be teaching people about it.
So Danielle, you calling for a new NFT bull run? Is that what I'm hearing?
Maybe. I think
you seen Pudgy Penguins did really well the last couple of days. Isn't that weird how there's certain ones that have just been like coming out of the blue for no reason? I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not into those, but yeah.
I'm enjoying the little pump mutants and stuff we're getting though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like we're going to be trading sideways probably for another year. So all this little, these are just little blips. Like, don't throw in everything now expecting that we're about to take off on the moon. I think, you know, before when we see these little, like, little mini bear seasons in the NFT space, people kind of panic and they stop building their projects and they're like, oh, ETH went down by this much and we're done. We're just done. And everything kind of falls. Mm-hmm. But right now we're seeing projects are still building. They're building partnerships and they're doing collabs and they're still having events and all of these things. Like, people haven't stopped building this time. So I think we're just kind of leveling off. People are realizing like, okay, this is where we're going to be for a while. And like, we'll see who comes out in the end that actually built anything.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's better. It's something where, you know, if it's not a legitimate project, people are going to give up on it. They're not going to bother working on it.
Sure.
So it's a time where you get people building genuine, purposeful projects as opposed to just, hey, let's try to make some quick money.
Exactly. The hype is gone, but that's a good thing.
Yep. Totally. Right on. Well, hey, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I'll be sure to check out your podcast From the Blockchain and have a listen. I appreciate you taking this time. Oh, hey, are you going to be doing the, what's it called? NFT NYC? I just found out one of my pieces is going to be displayed there. So that's cool.
Yes. I'm speaking the one in April, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Right on. Well, I'll see if I can make it. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to if your piece is going to be there.
You think so, right? Like, you should, right?
Well, and a lot of times they put those pieces through the Times Square things. So you got to go stand at Times Square and wait for your piece or your name and take a picture of yourself.
That would be cool. Yeah. People back home would just be like, you Photoshopped that, right? Be like, no, it's real. I swear, it really happened.
Here's a video of me standing here for 4 hours waiting for it.
See? Like, proof.
The sun's going down.
Time-lapse video.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's a good idea. I could do that. Right on. Well, hey, thank you very much. And yeah, maybe I will see you in New York. Try saying that quickly. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Right on. Take care. Have an awesome day.
Yeah. Thanks.
And happy New Year.
Yeah, you too.
Right on. Thank you. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode of NFP with Decline, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.